Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 317 of the Roguecast, recorded December 22nd, 2020. Dave of Christmas Past.
It is 2 days from Christmas Eve as we record this.
Yeah, it's nice. It's festive. People are shopping.
During this podcast, we'll be visited by three ghosts.
Oh my gosh. You know, that's kind of, in its weird way, true, because we have the podcast broken up into three different staffers.
With three different co-hosts.
Yes.
So Dave, or should I say, the ghost of Christmas Past.
I'm the Dave of Christmas Past.
You're the Dave of Christmas Past.
Actually, yeah, it's real specific.
we are busy enough that we are going to sort of leave two people on the floor and two people podcasting today.
We cannot afford to have three people back here right now.
We can't.
But that means that basically I will do the news segment, then Nick will do the comic segment, and then Anna will do the... what do you call it? Feature thing, what we're watching. No, we're just going to talk about Cyberpunk.
We're going to talk about Cyberpunk 2077. And that makes me your host. I'm Jacob Marley, thank you very much.
Jacob Marley's dead.
Yep, I've been dead the whole time.
Whoa.
That's the twist.
You know, you could probably do some pretty decent postmodern stuff like that, weird creepiness, but... it'll be fun, though.
Nick and I are going to talk about Christmas movies, too, because we've been watching a bunch of Christmas movies. So.
Yep.
We had some news left over. Last week, we had the flood of Marvel and Disney news.
Yeah, some stuff had to get postponed.
And we left out some fairly big news. So Dave and I are going to talk about that. And no big store news this week. There's not a ton of new stuff for the games that came out this week.
If anybody is needing to, like, store hours are... Actually, we have found that maintaining our closing time of 7 has worked for the season.
Yep,
there's,
yep.
It's things slow down, and there's, like, not a bunch of people at the door when we close up. You know, people are just going to... I think it's...
No urchins, is what you're saying? No urchins out there?
No urchins, yeah.
Please, sir, may we have some more comics?
Don't come in at 9 for Figgy Pudding, because we... Marvel canceled that series.
They won't go until they get some.
We're closing at normal hours on Christmas Eve. We're closed for Christmas Day, as always.
Yep.
Back open the next day.
Yeah, that's right.
Come bust out some gift certificates that you hopefully got as gifts.
Yep.
Or see what kind of desperate restocking we're doing.
We sold a lot of gift certificates this year, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, the restock's been interesting this year with shipping being weird.
I was going to mention for those of you who are doing last-minute gifts, we may be getting a shipment or two on Thursday, Christmas Eve day.
We may get a lot of stuff on Christmas Eve
right.
day.
Or we could get nothing. We can't pin hopes on it, but if there's been something you've been holding out for, check in with us, drop us an email or a phone call, and we'll see what we can do.
We are hoping for Tasha's to come back in, the D&D book.
Yep.
We do have Heroes Feast in stock right now, which is a great gift
yes.
for our people.
Yeah, people have been actually making some of those recipes and getting some feedback from it that it sounds like they did a really good job.
We also have Terrors of London, which is one of my favorite games to recommend. It's a two-player deck builder that's $20, which is ridiculously cheap for a deck builder.
Yeah, you get to play gothic horror characters, like kind of, especially kind of like the twisty goth versions of Frankenstein and Dracula and stuff
It's like World of Darkness meets gothic Mary Shelley's World of Darkness.
Yeah, meets the fun gameplay of a deck builder game, which deck builders are the funnest.
Indeed. All right, so let's just hit the news. Anna DuVernay is going to head up a Naomi show at CW. This is interesting because CW has been doing a lot of stuff. They did Stargirl. They've done mostly established characters. Stargirl is somewhat new, but also she's been around since like the late 90s, right?
Right. It's just that the character was under the radar. She never became like a big icon.
Right.
But anybody who read, that was when Geoff Johns was making a name for himself at JSA, and she was linked to it, and fans tend to know her.
But Naomi is new. She was created by Bendis and David Walker.
Yep. And you and I don't know all the details because we didn't read all of that series.
No, but you read some of it.
I read some of it, yes.
You got the gist.
Yes. That was a small town girl, mysterious powers.
Did she turn out to have a famous dad or something?
Well, they hinted initially that there was some link to Superman or something like that, but it was like... I believe she had one parent who was Thanagarian and one who was somebody else. They were like...
Ranian.
Who had, like, I think they met stationed on Earth, like, doing spying stuff, or initially as, opposing each other.
Right.
And in some way, shape, or form, there was, like, it's not just that she has this alien heritage, but she actually has some power, and I don't know what her power is, but something they bequeathed to her.
Yeah, because she doesn't just, like, Hawkman wings and a laser gun, although that'd be cool.
It's true.
But
she was a good character, and I liked the work they did, especially with her relationship with her parents. And oh, by the way, also terrific art on it. People should, anyone curious about the, what the, getting a little, wanting a little hint of it, should just go ahead and pick up the mini-series graphic novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is going to become a CW series?
It's going to be a CW series, yeah.
Have they cast her yet?
I don't believe they cast her yet.
I'm sure that whoever they cast, I'm not going to know the name.
Yeah.
Even like when Zendaya was cast as MJ, I didn't know who she was at the time.
Now you know.
Now I know, and she's huge. Mm-hmm. I think that's sort of bodes well. You and I are not the biggest Bendis fans, but we sometimes like what other people do with his creations.
Well, we were talking about this in store, that like Bendis's legacy is he's created all these great characters. He didn't usually do the best work with them, but he finds something. Like, he created Miles Morales. He created Jessica Jones. He sort of brought Luke Cage back to prominence. Like, he has single-handedly diversified Marvel, and he's doing the same thing in DC.
Yep.
And at the same time made these new characters who are fascinating and interesting. And basically it's like, he never does stuff I like with them, for the most part.
Right.
But he does
set the stage.
Yeah, and so I think that... I'm hoping we will see the same thing from him in DC. Naomi definitely seems to be a character who may catch on and be as interesting as Miles has become over at Marvel.
Yeah, and I don't know if we're going to segue right into it, but we'll have some more Bendis news later that's interesting, even if it's kind of in our...
No, let's segue into it. So,
okay.
DC has announced post Future State, which is going to be their January February launch.
Right.
That's
basically a glimpse forward at the future of these characters or the legacy. We may see legacy heroes. We may see very changes to established heroes, etc.
And those creative teams are continuing on in some other books, so they're going to lay seeds for things that they'll be doing.
Yep.
But the big launch is something called DC Infinite Future. It's a weird name. Infinite Frontier, which is a tie-in to their constant use of the phrase, whereas infinite,
yep,
and Darwin Cook's New Frontier, Dave. I think you probably pegged it as that, wanting to touch on that.
Yeah, it's an interesting call. Is it, Randy? Answer the question. Is it a reboot?
No, it is not. In fact, some of the numbering is going to be continuing on.
Okay, good.
So they're not doing a big reboot. There are probably going to be some changes. Death Metal was in the universe, so there was some crazy. Time.
Right, sometimes things, the reality gets shifted.
Yeah.
The playing pieces move.
For example, somehow I'm going to guess Harley Quinn is going to be more like her animated version.
Right, I could see that. Although, weirdly, she has several successful animated versions.
Yeah.
That are like, there's like 90s animated, current one, which is, I know what you're talking about. But there's also, you know, we all like the Harley Quinn movie, the Birds of Prey movie.
Yep.
And I wouldn't mind seeing more of that element in it.
So Infinite Frontier number 0. Is there one shot? It's like, I think it's 64 pages. It's got a bunch of stories. They're setting up this new Joker series by James Tynion and Gillam March, which, by the way, great creative team.
Yep.
They did a piece in one of the, I want to say the Death Metal, or what, there was a one shot. Oh, it's the Batman Joker War one shot.
Mm-hmm.
They did a setup for this. But basically, it is the Joker, something by Joker, he does something unthinkable, and it makes him the target of a worldwide dragnet. And Jim Gordon, who is now an ex-cop, is going to be in pursuit of him. He's going to be a Javert.
Oh, that sounds fun.
And I'm like, that's a good premise. I like that.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. That's going to be premiered here. Yara Flor, the new Wonder Girl, will be in a story that begins to search for her destiny in connection to the Amazons. I'm not sure who the creative team on that one is. It might be Joshua Williamson. I'm not sure.
This is a dumb question. I think we talked about it before, but... Is the current one, she's from South America?
Yes. And she's going to show up in Future
State. Is she actually tied to the Amazon River?
I would guess yes.
Their kind of fun connection.
Because her dad's like the river god, and it's probably the Amazon River god.
Yeah. It's dumb, but I hadn't thought of that connection specifically until just now.
Dave, her secret identity should work for Amazon.
Yes. So there's so many possibilities.
And then Titans Tower has a new group of teen heroes, including Red X, to the original Teen Titans.
What is Red X?
He's one of the guys from the Teen Titans show, I believe.
Oh, okay.
So this is a...
I was like, is that a Red Hood spinoff? Because, yeah, I never watched the Teen Titans cartoon. I don't watch baby cartoons.
The new series is called Teen Titans Academy. It's written by Tim Sheridan, whose work I don't know. Art by Rafe Sandoval. I always like to see a new Teen Titans.
Yeah, I like Academy format stuff, at least usually in theory. Sometimes they don't take off for me. But, you know, the Xavier's School format and stuff like that, I kind of like.
Jeff Johns and Todd Knock are telling an all-new Stargirl story, which Stargirl's great.
Yeah.
And then Wonder Woman is going to be Becky Cloonan's going to be writing.
Oh, interesting.
And it's continuing on. Wonder Woman continues with 770, so they're not renumbering. And then there's the big news, the news that made me tear my hair out if I had hair, which is that Bendis is taking over Justice League.
Yeah.
He is doing it with David Marquez on art. New Justice League members include Black Adam, Hippolyta, and Naomi.
Hippolyta, Wonder Woman's mom, Hippolyta.
Yep. I don't expect to enjoy this, but Bendis is the guy who destroyed an Avengers for me forever.
Yeah.
And I feel like him coming into... The thing with Justice League is I'm not as invested in Justice League.
Right.
And also, it's not been so great that I mind somebody destroying it.
Also, Justice League does have a history going back at least as far as the Detroit Justice League of the 80s of some weird teams. And within that stuff, like Hippolyta's been on the Justice League before.
Yeah.
Like, they've done her before, and I think it's been in Justice Society, too.
Yep.
And stuff. Naomi makes sense to the youth. There's always been, like, kind of younger heroes go as far back as, I guess I'd say, Firestorm.
Yep.
But I'm sure before that, too. And Black Lightning has been on the JSA. He's a little...
Black Adam.
Or sorry, Black Adam. But he's been in the JSA. Kind of an edgelord thing to put on Justice League.
Yeah. It's because there's a movie coming. That's one thing Bendis has a good sense for is what's going to be hot next year.
Right.
So he's got Naomi, who's his character, but is also going to have a CW series.
Right.
He's got Black Adam, who's going to have a movie next year or the year after.
Yeah.
He's got Hippolyta, who's probably in Wonder Woman 1984.
Right.
So that's probably where all that is coming from.
Yeah, now that makes sense. He's, I'm sure he will come up with his reasons to get them together. You know, I will, like most Bendis things these days, I'll go ahead and give it a read or two before I determine that the quirks are not something I can deal with. It's going to look great because David Marquez is a guy who did Miles Morales art and is, you know, one of the kind of defined the look of the character. But probably will not be for either of us.
No.
May take off for some other people.
It
like
might.
there was you know, not a huge wave of it, but like his Superman book got a following.
Yeah.
And stuff like Naomi and was it Young Justice?
Justice?
Yeah. So we will see. But that one is probably not going to be a big one for you and I.
I was hoping that Tom Taylor was going to get the Justice League.
Oh man, that's who they should take it over when Bendis and Everby flops it.
Yes.
By the way, though, I like all those characters. I like like Black Adam.
Sure.
I liked what I've read of Naomi, and I like Hippolyta.
Yeah.
So. Theoretically, it could work. It's just that I know it's going to open with an interrogation scene. that the characters are all going to shout their names in their logos.
Yep.
And like, just every Bendis quirk I've ever seen is going to be in there. Hippolyta is going to sound like everybody else instead of, like, a goddess.
Yep. But Tom Taylor is actually doing Nightwing for them with Bruno Redondo, who was his Suicide Squad artist. And I'm cool with that. He just did a big interview for IGN talking about it. I haven't read it yet, but I'm excited to see Tom Taylor doing anything at DC. But Nightwing seems like a character who could use a good creator on it.
Yeah, it seems like Nightwing fans are... I feel they're like a little bit like maybe like Teen Titans fans in the sense that these are very popular properties that I feel like have been kind of poorly used by DC. They never seem to know what they want to do with it. Every once in a while, there's a good little short run, but then it gets... Then somebody who sucks takes over afterwards.
It's had maybe some of the worst... Like, we talk about Daredevil having, like, a run of, like, great creative teams.
Right. People, he just draws out the best creators.
Nightwing is, like, the anti-Daredevil.
Yeah.
Because he seems to draw in the worst hacks to come and ruin him.
Yes.
Devin Grayson, who, by the way, is not a hack. Devin Grayson's a perfectly fine writer. I don't love a lot of her stuff, but she was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But she did this awful run where he was undercover in Crutches.
Yes, that was his Matches Malone was a guy who was on crutches.
We still make fun of how bad the writing was in that.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
And
then Scott Lobdell recently did this dumb thing where he got shot in the head and became a Rick Grayson.
Yes. Man, like, that should have... The editorial should have shot that one
down.
And
Dio spent, like, 15 years trying to get him killed.
Right. So, Tom Taylor is a guy, he loves the characters he works on. He's been doing amazing work that people have been really liking on Deceased. So if he can bring some of that to Nightwing, I'm curious, will he go in the slightly, like, grittier urban direction of, like, you know, his City Protector, Bloodhaven Nightwing? Or is he going to go the Nightwing who's kind of been on the Justice League and stuff at times?
Right.
Is he going to be more of a big hero? I feel like whatever he does, he's got a good chance of making me like it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I would prefer Tom Taylor to be on Green Arrow or Justice League,
man.
But that's okay.
Green Arrow would just be the best.
Yeah. Switching gears a little bit, there's a Dogman movie in the work from DreamWorks.
Oh, interesting. This is a CG kind of thing, I guess?
I'm honestly surprised this hasn't happened already, because this thing is one of the most popular properties in the world.
Randy, I have never read a Dogman. Did you read this stuff with kids?
I have read some stuff with kids, and it's actually really funny.
It's clever.
The premise is this. There is a cop who's like a really good cop. He's like the top cop or whatever.
Yeah.
Something happens, and a dog head gets sewed onto him or something. He basically becomes a dog. Yeah. And it's like...
You've told me this before, I know, but I kind of forgot
it. It's ridiculous. And he's like... He's mostly a dog.
Yeah.
But he is like a goofy, naive cop dog.
Yeah.
And he has like... There's a cat who's like a con artist who's always in prison, who's like his nemesis.
Yeah.
And there's a beleaguered chief who's frustrated by Dogman's inability to just follow simple instructions. It's wacky and funny, and there's lots of puns, and the titles are all like riffs on classic literature, like For Whom the Bell Tolls is For Whom the Ball Rolls.
Yeah, yeah.
And A Tale of Two Kitties and yeah. That kind of stuff.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty smart for dumb kids stuff.
It's put out through Scholastic, right?
Yeah.
Who they find the best kids properties.
Yeah.
So this is probably going to be like huge, right?
It's going to be huge, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's sort of like, I guess when I was a kid, this would probably be like the equivalent of like, you know, sort of like a Charlie Brown movie or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
Something that I was just like instantly going to see.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Also in the sort of kids movie vein, Chris Evans is going to voice Buzz Lightyear in Lightyear, which is a movie about the real space ranger that Buzz Lightyear's toy is based on.
That one weirds me out.
It's a little weird. But
am
honestly,
I correct? Has the Toy Story universe? That's not canonically part of what Toy Story is, right?
No,
they've never said there's a real Buzz Lightyear in that, right?
No, but they've sort of implied that there's a real like space command and all that stuff. Like, he has a whole cartoon and stuff that's like him as a space ranger. And I wonder if that is this. If it's like this is the cartoon universe of Buzz Lightyear as space commander, not as wacky toy who thinks he's like space commander. But the actual space commander.
Now, what format is this new show? Is it a show or a movie?
Yeah.
What format is it going to take? Live action?
CGI.
CG.
Yeah.
Okay, and who's the actor?
Chris Evans is going to voice him.
Okay.
And here's the thing. Chris Evans played Cap.
Yeah.
That's the perfect guy to do a Buzz Lightyear type.
For sure. And it's going to let him do some fun, probably a little bit... Well, like, I don't know if... Is the real one supposed to be kind of goofy, too?
I imagine it'll be a little...
The Shatner-y, kind
of
over the top.
A little bit of that.
Yeah.
And we know Chris Evans can pull that off.
It'd be interesting to see, because I can kind of picture, you know how Galaxy Quest was like kind of a family-friendly-ish Star Trek?
Yeah.
But the bad guys were still dangerous,
yeah.
You know, they still tortured somebody, but they did it with like electricity that
mm-hmm.
was like spacey electricity, so it didn't seem super terrible.
Pixar's good at this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I actually feel like a kind of a family-ish sci-fi show about like a Buck Rogers-y kind of dude could
Ooh,
be...
Not show.
Yeah. Could be kind of fun.
I agree. Also,
and
Tim
Chris
Allen's
Evans, great.
Kind of a jerk,
yeah.
By all accounts,
just get him out of the property.
He was perfect for Buzz Lightyear. His voice was great,
yeah.
But it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I kind of would rather have Chris Evans, who's a good guy, on there.
Yeah.
So
get rid of the guy who's actually full of himself in the exact same way that Buzz Lightyear.
Yep.
and replace him with a guy who's actually got the qualities of the heroic Buzz Lightyear.
Yep. We know folks miss Saga, so we have some news for you. It's not good news, but it is news. Brian K. Vaughan may be pulling a George R. R. Martin here. He may have written himself into a corner, because rather than bringing Saga back, he's working on a Buck Rogers show for Legendary.
Man.
I don't know if anybody really wants a Buck Rogers show. I mean, you and I, Dave, have a certain fondness for Buck Rogers.
I love old space rockety properties and stuff like that. I don't usually see them done well. Like,
yeah.
I kind of, like, peek in on whatever revamp and stuff that they do. But, like, most of the time, it doesn't connect for me. What I remember is, like, a handful of ones that really took off. Like, Flash Gordon from the 1980
right.
thing. Or I actually really like Dan Jurgens' Flash Gordon comic for DC in the late 80s. So just once in a blue moon, there was the Buck Rogers game from TSR, which
yep,
also
they,
got some
they,
video
they
games.
They went big in on Buck Rogers.
So, like, I am a good candidate for viewership on something like this. And incidentally, I'm not a big Saga fan. I actually kind of fell off Brian Vaughan's writing for the
yep.
most part. So I suppose I might be the one person who's kind of like, more interested in Brian Vaughn's Buck Rogers than I am in him finishing Saga. But for all my friends, I want him to go and finish Saga.
Yeah, he needs to finish Saga.
Do you think, Randy, he was doing Saga and he was like, there's just too many dirty words and kind of naughty situations in this. I need something clean cut like Buck Rogers.
I think he wrote himself into a corner.
Man, it's a terrifying idea.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I'm also hoping that maybe everybody, you know, it has been a couple of years. It was supposed to be this year it was coming back, and now it's not. Right. I'm hoping that to some extent this was a, like, he was...
Pandemic
just,
surprise.
He's just working.
Yeah.
He's working, and so...
And he's just going to announce it.
He's working on Saga, but he's also... Like, I hope that there's scripts out there. I think the best thing for him to do would have been to do some kind of interview or announcement, and like, hey, I'm doing a Buck Rogers show, and Saga's already written. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, the radio silence is a little bit troubling.
Yeah, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, for everybody, for all the Saga fans' sake, I hope that we get an announcement on that soon.
Yeah, me too. Finally, we've got Chris Pine has been cast in a D&D movie, which immediately spurred a bunch of memes about how the script was being rewritten when... It's basically like the script is being hurriedly rewritten as the protagonists talk to a tavern owner for an hour instead of who was supposed to be the bad guy, or making D&D jokes, basically.
Yeah. That's funny. This movie, I seem to remember, had some decent people on it. There was basically, what I remember from what I had heard before is, like, there were reasons to be somewhat enthusiastic for it, and also reasons to think, like, oh, these guys, the writers had also done some crap.
Well, it's at Paramount. I'm trying to see if it got anything.
They weren't setting it in a specific world, right? Like the Forgotten Realms.
Oh, okay.
Or...
So it's directed by the team behind Game Night, which I didn't love, but I know that Nick was a fan of
Game Night.
John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein. John Francis Daly is the actor who was on, I think I want to say Freaks and Geeks, maybe.
Okay.
Or no, maybe he was on Undeclared, I think, or something like that.
Okay.
He's been in some geeky stuff. He's a nerd.
Yeah.
So they're adapting a script from Michael Giglio, who I don't know that name. We'll see. I mean,
Chris Pine is a good actor. That's who we're talking about, right?
Yep.
What was the movie that the movie he did that was No Country for Old Men-esque? You know, the two brothers.
Man, it's something Texas.
Did it have water flooding? Something.
It had some kind of name. It was some kind of big. It's not. It's not till the devil, before never the devil knows you're dead. But it's a name like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. While you're looking, I'm looking at Michael Giglio to see. So he is. Here's the thing that makes me a little nervous. These guys who are directing and writing, they're all actors. And you know how I feel about artist writers.
Yeah.
And this guy has written a movie called Quick Stop, a movie called Jolene, he did some additional writing on, and Dungeons & Dragons. So not a lot of writing credits to this dude.
Yeah, that's a hell or high water.
Hell or high water.
That was why I thought water in my head, then floods.
Yeah.
But which was also probably making me think of Stevie Ray Vaughan's Texas Flood song.
Yep.
anyway, but if you haven't seen him outside of sort of the genre work of like working in Star Trek and stuff like that, or Jack Ryan, I guess, he does some like serious character work in Hell or High Water,
right.
And you will see that this guy like has some real talent. He could bring something because he's both like leading man type. And he's got some acting abilities. It's kind of like Tom Cruise, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
He could bring something to a D&D movie. I want it to be remarkable to have a clever, witty script, or to be like, you know, use Eberron or the Forgotten Realms or whatever.
Right.
But if they need a kind of a big name actor to anchor it on, you could definitely do worse than Chris Pine.
Honestly, if they would just announce some casting, if they announce that they like cast, say, why am I blanking on his name? Magneto and
Ian McKellen. And
if they had said Ian McKellen is going to be playing Elminster,
right?
I'd be like, okay, I'm in. You guys are doing.
Are they going to get the Rock as Warduke?
Or cast somebody as Drizzt?
Yeah,
get Michael B. Jordan to play Drizzt. I mean, basically, if they get somebody big and they put them in one of these roles we recognize, I think that would be a sign that they're taking this seriously. But until then, I'm going to assume this is just going to be like that dumb Dungeons & Dragons movie they did. with Jeremy Irons and Thor Birch.
It'll just be a little bit better and more well-intentioned and higher budget.
Yeah, but nobody's made it work, and it should be doable.
I do think... Here's the thing I don't like about Drizzt. Even though I enjoyed the Drizzt original trilogy back in the day, he's kind of a typical, you know, badass Wolverine kind of guy with a little bit of melancholy to him, just like Wolverine has.
Yeah.
Though, and it is not necessarily great for like an exploration of the Forgotten Realms world. And you know, for a D&D movie, I kind of want it to move around. I want dungeons.
Oh, I want
dragons. I want taverns.
I don't want him to be the lead. I think
How do you not do that? How do you have here's what I was thinking, Randy. What if the first movie, and it's already probably too late, but what if the first movie was a Drizzt movie, and essentially that opened the door? Like, if they could do a successful version of that that showed you slices of that world, and people were like, what a cool setting this is, let's start the D&D shared universe, except don't say those words, because that will destroy the movie. as it is, if they could do... I'm trying to think of any movies where you have a sequence where some cool character who's cool meets like a legend character.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I can. Maybe if they showed something that intersected with Drizzt in his younger days, when he's like untried and he's still on the run from like assassins from the Underdark and stuff like that.
I think something like that.
And they like work together for like a sequence or something like that, or he frees him from captivity. Yeah. And you know, but you see, oh, Drizzt is a badass. That would be
all
right.
You know, also, all I need is there to be a headline like, hey, there's a beholder in the D&D movie, and I'll be on board.
Yeah.
Just give me a beholder, a mind flayer, a mimic, or something.
I would like it to be Xanathar, though, or something owlbear. Like that. Yeah. Owlbear. Yes. An owlbear there to give hugs of death.
There are owlbears. Like, that's all you gotta, it's all you gotta say.
But I think we can say that, like, Chris Pine is a potentially good development, although it also risks turning it into a star-based property, and I think we don't want that, necessarily.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway.
We'll see.
What else we
got? That's it. That's all the news we got this week. All
right.
So that'll take us to the news, and...
I hope you've learned a lesson from the Dave of Christmas Past, and that you'll be ready to make a turn in about 40 minutes or whatever when we get to the end of this for the better.
Yes.
Are you ready to turn your life around yet?
Yeah.
You're not supposed to be yet.
You're about to get a visit from the Nick of Christmas Present.
Oh my goodness.
Strange Spectre. Where are you? It is the Nick of Christmas Present.
I was going to say, I'm told that I'm the Nick of the Christmas Present.
You're the Nick of Christmas Present. And as you point out, possibly you should be the Nick of Christmas Past, because we're talking about 3 weeks worth of comics here.
Right.
But that's not how the story goes.
That's like the current present.
I told Dan I was Jacob Marley, but since I'm the one being visited by the three ghosts, I guess I am Scrooge.
I mean...
Which is possible, because I do make you all work without any lamp oil here.
That's true. We don't have lamp oil.
There's no lamp oil.
And we do have frigid water in our bathroom.
Oh, we do have frigid water in our bathroom, yes. I am a tight wad, and I will force us all to work on Christmas Day.
Sounds awful.
Yeah. So, the last few weeks, there's not been, like, a ton of stuff, but there's been some interesting new issues and stuff.
New issues, some reprints of some comics.
Yeah, I guess that's one of the big things is that we got the reprint of TMNT The Last Ronin.
Yep.
Second printing in. We got it in, we sold it out, we got more in. So,
yes.
If you missed the TMNT Last Ronin, good news, we have it now.
Yes.
And
the new issue is, remind me, January 24th or 29th, somewhere
something
in that
like that. Yeah,
so
it's in January currently.
The second issue is coming. It got delayed slightly, but it is coming.
Then we've got some new. There was an image book Kirkman dropped on us. Like he loves to do this. We didn't order it.
Nope.
This is kind of like his die.
Yeah. There was something else. I can't remember.
Basically, it's a team book written by him with art by Ryan Otley, his Invincible co-creator, and it is printed on sort of newsprint paper. It is Solid Blood number 17. Now, you might be thinking, I hadn't even seen the first 16 issues of Solid Blood. Well, guess what? Neither is anyone else.
Probably neither is Kirkman.
No. This is a nod, and it's very 90s, to, they did this in the 90s, so like, Spawn or somebody else jumped ahead, like, 20 issues or something and showed their future and then spent like the next year and a half building toward it.
I feel like Kirkman is just kind of nostalgia. That's what he lives for, so he wants to repeat stuff that happened to him as a kid, so jumping into the 17th issue of a book with no prior knowledge is fun.
So yeah, this is a big this is a big superhero team book.
Yeah, it's essentially like a Justice League, or
if it was super bloody and invincible like.
Yeah. Well, okay, well, let's just go with what it is. Youngblood.
Yeah, it's Youngblood. and there's a Spawn looking bad guy called Necromonger.
Yeah.
There's the conceit is that it takes place in the middle of this big story. There's a big fight going on with all these characters you don't know. There's a big twist at the end about you, but I thought you were dead. And it's goofy superhero fun. If you're into that kind of thing, there's a pinup of the team at the end. You could probably give that a look and see if there's a new... and there's also an ad in the back for Kick Fight, issue 9, coming in March from Image, which I think is another nod to the notion of this is like from an alternate universe where this has all been published.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a fun kind of gag, and I don't know if Kirkman's going to continue with it, or if it's just like a dumb one-off thing you decide to do. But
this is a Christmas present to you.
Yeah, kind of a goofy fun thing if you like Kirkman's stuff.
Yep.
There is Homesick Pilots, a new horror series from Image. It's sort of a haunted house meets Rock Band story.
Okay, interesting. I didn't read this one, so
it's got really pretty art.
I flipped through it.
The art and the colors are just stunning. It's got sort of a purple red kind of vibe going to it. It is. They've described it as sort of Scooby Doo meets Power Rangers, I think, something like that. Anyway, it's an interesting first issue. If you are looking for a new Image book, or if you like sort of horror stuff, or if you like, say, Scott Pilgrim a little bit, it's got a little bit of that Rock Band vibe to it. It's a good first issue.
Now I just want Scooby-Doo actually in the Power Rangers. Can that happen?
Sure, why not?
It's Christmas.
There are two sci-fi books, The Expanse book from Boom, which is a four-issue miniseries bridging season 4 and season 5.
Yep.
As always with Boom, really nice art, and it focuses on the Bobby the Marine from Mars, as well as Shura Eglodowsu's character is, but mostly it's Bobby's story. And then Blade Runner 2029, which takes the character we knew from the first one and moves her forward 10 years. So she's now in the far future of 2029. again, really nice art on this.
Yeah.
I like the character. They've done a really good job of telling stories in the Blade Runner universe. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the best version that we could have hoped for, honestly. Yeah.
Post-Americana, which is a new book from Steve Scroach, who is, he was the one of the design artists on Matrix.
Matrix.
He did a memorable Wolverine run with Warren Ellis.
Yep.
He just co-wrote and drew Maestros, which is a very Mark Millar feeling book over an Image.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about
this
that
This is a sort of post-apocalyptic book about the 1% trying to run a post-apocalyptic America, and I believe a... renegade younger fighter pilot woman who is like, no, you guys can't do that. Really pretty.
Did he also do work with Brian Vaughan on that We Stand on Guard?
He does weird sci-fi stuff. And he has this sort of super detailed style that reminds me of nothing more than Jeff Darrow stuff.
Yes.
But it's very pretty, and if you like sort of apocalyptic sci-fi, it's a good first issue. So, I think it's almost a four-issue miniseries. And then there is the hardcover that came out last week, Reckless.
Yeah. I always respect Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips for their work. I don't always read it.
Yep.
Just because I have to be in a mood. I heard tell that this was sort of akin to like a Jack Reacher, get revenge kind of storyline. And it is indeed that. And I was super happy with it. I'm only halfway through it, though, so I can't really talk about, like, endings and spoilers and things like that, but everything that has happened in the first half, I'm just in love with it.
It's a Brubaker Phillips book, so you know it's going to have a happy ending.
Yeah, oh, of course.
Because they always are big on the happy endings.
But the conceit for this is about a man who was undercover with a...
like a weatherman type.
Yeah, weatherman-type group, and things go awry, he falls in love with somebody there.
Yeah.
Just the story, all the elements ring really true.
And this is set in the 80s, so it's like 5 or 10 years past that. So
yeah.
It's like, he is now operating out of a movie theater that he got.
Yep.
And he is like a private investigator type. He's a troubleshooter.
Yeah, he used to just do everything by word of mouth, but now he has a phone number that people can call. And if your story is interesting enough, he'll come and help.
It's funny because it very much feels like a 80s TV pitch.
Yeah. It's kind of a light A-team kind of thing.
Yeah. But the approach is very much the sort of grim noir that Brubaker and Phillips do well.
Yeah.
And it's gorgeous.
Well, honestly, I think this is probably my favorite thing Sean Phillips has done. Some of his characters can feel a little samey.
Yeah.
This one, all the characters felt new.
Yeah.
Like I hadn't seen their models before or...
I get that.
And I just think the main character is really interesting. He has, like, a brain injury. He doesn't really kind of connect with humanity anymore.
Right.
But he still has a desire to help people, even though it is sort of for reasons for himself a little bit, to sort of feel normal.
Yeah.
It kind of resets him to back to zero, and he can sleep, mm-hmm. and he can do all these things. But it's just a really interesting character. And you said this is a trilogy, right?
Yeah, he has said that he's doing three. At the back of the book, they've got the previous one's coming out next year in, I want to say, like, March.
Yeah.
But he also said, I think this is a thing he could see himself doing for a while.
Oh, well, I hope he does, because I really have enjoyed it. I read a bunch of the quotes on the back from, like, Patton Oswalt, and they're all comparing it to, like, the Richard Parker stuff, and I can definitely see that.
I loved this. I read it. I read it when preview copy, and then I reread it recently when I just got it. Also, they all come with book plates.
Yeah.
So they've got a little book plate on the back that has signed by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. You take a glue stick, you put it in. It's like a signed book.
You don't even need it. It has self adhesive on the back because I already put it in my book.
Oh well, I used a glue stick. but yeah, so that's pretty cool. And I think this is it comes out as a graphic novel. It's a nice looking hardcover. It's a perfect Christmas present for the crime fan.
I was going to say, if you know a crime fan, or if you are a crime fan yourself, do yourself a favor and get this book for you.
So let's talk about this week's books, which I think the big sell this week for you and me, Nick, is also a hardcover.
Yep.
And that is the yearly installment of Claws
from
Grant Morrison and Dan Mora.
We don't get a new one this year.
Not get a new one this year, which is a bummer. But this is the two previous one-shots collected.
Yep.
It is The Crying Snowman.
Yep. And The Life of...
And Life and Times of Joe Christmas, which is like his sidekick, which is done as a series of basically calendar. It's a calendar,
Yeah, it's
right?
a calendar. It's basically a vehicle for Dan Mora's artwork that Morrison was like, here's some fun ideas, but let's let you kind of have the front seat this time. And yeah, he tells him sort of a reverse order style of this one person's life and sort of the antics that he and Claus get up to through 40 or 50 years worth of time.
Yeah.
And it's pretty amazing.
I was bummed there was not a story to it directly. Like, there's no dialogue. It is just basically like covers of years of adventures. But as I look through it, I'm like, man, this is a really good story.
Yeah, but if he wanted to, like... Oh, this is a story I could tell, so you could go back and just tell that one story of, like, a giant fruitcake that is about to destroy the entire world by colliding.
Yep.
Or them meeting the Beatles.
Yep.
Or...
Yeah, there's stories in the art.
Yeah.
And then there's, of course, a nice cover gallery in the back of all the different various covers and design stuff, and it's a nice hardcover. I have all the Claws on. I think this is the third one?
Yes, this is the third one.
And I am always delighted at these. These usually come out at Christmas time, and I kind of give them a reread. But
beautifully done. It's got gold leaf paper.
Mm-hmm.
The production values from Boom are stellar. Yeah, it's oversized.
For people who don't know, Claws is basically the first series was sort of... Claws was sort of a barbarian.
Yeah,
and
Beginning of Santa Claus.
Yeah, there was a village that had like an evil evil tyrant who was like not letting the kids have toys, and Santa, this barbarian, starts delivering toys subversively to them to bring happiness to them.
And he finds out that the king is being sort of manipulated by something.
And then it turns into a yearly like superhero thing.
Yeah,
it's like Claus versus the Martians, and he had a run-in with the Snow Queen, and is basically like. If you took the Rankin-Bass Santa Claus and made it a superhero narrative that ran through all time because he's immortal, that's kind of what he was doing with it. And it's great. It's
Rankin-Bass
so
by Robert E. Howard meets psychedelics.
By way of Rankin-Bass, Robert E. Howard, and a lot of acid. Yeah. It's really fun. I love it. I'm glad to see this third hardcover. And I really hope we'll get some more Claws in the future.
I agree.
Otherwise, comic-wise, there is a king-size Conan.
Yep.
Celebrating the 50 years of Conan in comics. It's a anthology. It's got a new Roy Thomas story with Steve McNiven on art, new Kurt Busiek story with Pete Woods on art, a Chris Claremont story.
Yeah, I saw that.
With Roberto de la Torre. Kevin Eastman does a story, writes and draws, and then Stephen S. DeKnight, who I don't know if he has a Conan connection. Did he write the new Conan movie or something?
He may have. Now that you think about it.
He did some other TV property. Jesus Saya. So, nice art throughout, and it's basically short stories of Conan with a lot of writers who have worked on him.
Yeah.
And Kevin Eastman's the big draw. I think if you were a Turtles fan, the notion of seeing a...
Which is weird. I was flipping through it because Anna had grabbed a copy, and I was like, oh, Kurt Busiek. And that's what I kind of go to, because Busiek was my Conan.
Yeah, Busiek wrote the Conan.
When he brought that out, I was like all over it.
And then issue 2 of King in Black came out this week.
Yes, it did.
Which I thought this was a really good... All of Marvel's events tend to do this kind of like, this is the big, like, everybody's being pulled in.
Yeah.
It's a big universe-shaking threat. And I think that Don Cates has done a good job establishing Null as a threat. He's doing some other stuff with Venom and Venom's son. And there's a great moment for Human Torch in here.
I want to point out that he is working within the Marvel Universe and utilizing the toys really, really well.
Yeah.
Like, he's bringing in Valkyrie and showing her abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And then the FF and... his Spider-Man gets drawn in, but Namor is involved, and the X-Men, and, like, everybody has their kind of backstory, and he's getting to play around with it a little bit.
Yeah.
And bring it all together into this giant story, which kind of just brings it all together for me. I'm like, this is a cohesive universe. This feels like it's all, we're all reading one big thing.
It reminds me a little bit of what I liked about Empire Up Front, which what makes me a little nervous. It's always these crossovers lose me at the end. But Donny Cates has generally been doing a good job, and I've been liking it so far. So.
Yeah.
There is also the long-awaited second issue of Transformers Back to the Future.
Which we get Gigawatt's backstory revealed, which is awesome.
Yep. There's another new Transformer introduced, which was a surprise.
Yep.
And some great use of Marty and Doc Brown.
I agree. And also, weirdly, Rumble takes center stage.
Rumble takes center stage. Not a phrase I ever expected to say. This is super fun. Like,
it is.
It sounds like a fun concept, and they are just nailing it.
Yeah, they really, really are.
Number 4 of probably my favorite new book of the year is, or new book of next year, I'm sure, because there's only 4 issues this year.
Yes.
Department of Truth. This is probably the strongest thing James Tynion has written.
I need to get back to Something That's Killing the Children, because I know
this
is really good as well. But the every single issue of Department of Truth has wowed me.
Yeah.
In different ways. Like, the last issue was so, like, gut-punching, like, just super hard to read. This one is just like, oh, God.
Yeah. This one's dark but also, like, fascinating. The big twist in issue 1, where they sort of revealed the Department of Truth and what they're about, was good. And then they focused on different conspiracies in each one. This one is very much a QAnon kind of thing.
It is.
And they talk about how and why QAnon works, and it's really disturbing but interesting. And the punchline to this book was so good. The ending is great.
Yep. And I'm like, I don't know where they're going to go.
I don't either.
And
I'm
a good thing.
I'm enjoying the ride.
Exactly.
I'm really liking it.
And I had to say that the first issue, what is his name? Martin Simmons?
Yeah.
His art, I was a little... Like,
I couldn't about it first either.
But the further I'm getting along in the story, it's just such a nice kind of... It meshes really well. Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of... The guy who worked on Sam and Twitch with Bendis, like Sam Alberto Ponticelli.
Yeah,
or,
that's a good comparison.
Some of those guys, Ben Templesmith.
I was going to say, Ben Templesmith was the closest my brain could come.
Like, just not, it's like, it's an art style that doesn't work for everything, but when it does work, it works really, really well, and
I
think this is the one. Maestro, the Peter David series concludes, and there's another issue of Amazing Spider-Man 54 LR that goes into... Sin Eater and...
You've been really enjoying this.
Yeah, they're... I can't decide whether they're building toward Mary Jane and Peter reconciling and figuring out about the... if they're going to undo Brand New David.
Right.
And they're hinting at it. They're definitely teasing it.
Well, that would be a big thing for Spencer to be able to do.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that would be a... Because everybody hates One More Day.
Yeah, I think everybody wants... Everybody except Quesada wants it gone. So, I don't know. We'll see. I'm kind of hoping that's where they're leaning, but we really don't have any way of knowing.
Yeah.
What else is on your stack, Nick?
Actually, the only other thing I've got is Excalibur, which...
I know a bunch of X-Books the last few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, there was Excalibur, there's X-Factor...
Hellions.
And they're all sort of Fallout issues from after Ten of Swords and what things are going on. They've all been really good. This one, like I said, I haven't read, but I love that Megan is back, because she was always a good character. I love that Richter gets to be more center stage in this book, so... but also you get to see a little bit of downtime with Rogue and Gambit, and that's always fun.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that the X-Books are really kind of focusing on different characters and giving them a little bit more of a... We get to spend more time with them, which is nice.
I'm curious, Nick. Have you done any thinking towards your best of 2020?
I have, actually. Okay.
List is done.
I know. but I was... I'm waiting for basically Christmas Day, because because I'm going to do movies.
Okay.
I'm going to do like a top 20 movies and stuff of 2020, because I've watched a lot because I've been home.
I'm curious, do you know any movies you've watched this year?
Because
I keep track of all my pop culture.
I don't know if I do, but I've gotten, since I started doing Letterboxd, I've gotten a lot better about keeping things. And Christmas Day is Wonder Woman and Soul, so those are two that I know are supposed to be, like, fantastic.
Yeah.
Or at least Wonder Woman is supposed to be really satisfying.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting for that, and then I'll make my list.
I've roughly made my list, although I probably edited it before. I'm not going to post it. I'm working on it. But my comics list is one thing. My movie list, I don't usually make one, because I don't see that many movies.
Yeah.
But this last year, because of the Alamo Pass and then because of COVID...
Yeah.
I've watched, like, almost 80 movies this year, which is a lot for me.
Yeah.
It's what you watch in a month, I think.
I don't think that's quite right, but it's close.
That doesn't count rewatches. That was all new. Like, I watched almost 80 brand new to me or new movies this year.
That's either awesome or terrifying.
Yeah, well. so I was able to make a convincing top 20 list of movies, which usually I can't do.
Well, and I saw Tenet the other day, and somebody was... And I made the comment that I don't think Christopher Nolan would be even my top 20, like, best... directors.
Right.
So I'm like, I need to make a director's list again.
Yeah, we need to make this director. That was always fun. We used to do that.
Yeah.
Back when we had a free time at the store.
When was that?
all right, we're going to take a quick break, and then Nick and I are going to talk about Christmas movies. So this year, as Nick and I were just sort of talking about, I watch more movies than usual, but I always try to watch Christmas movies. I rewatch the same ones every year. I rewatch Scrooged, Elf, Christmas Vacation, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and then Die Hard is my Christmas Eve tradition.
Do you do the combo of Lethal Weapon and Die Hard, or just Die Hard?
I haven't watched Lethal Weapon in years, and Mel Gibson makes it hard to watch things now.
That's true. That's true.
I watch his stupid Bad Santa gun movie.
No, either. Why would you watch Fat Santa or whatever the hell it's called?
So Die Hard is my go-to Christmas Eve movie.
I did watch that one, weirdly.
Yeah. But I watched a bunch of movies that were new to me this year, and there's actually a couple things that made it into their rotation. Claws is new in my rotation.
Yes.
And I love that movie.
This is one I need to watch. I've heard nothing but good things.
I watched it the first time last year. It was nominated for an Academy Award.
Yep.
And I loved it. And I'd sort of forgotten about how much I enjoyed it. And then I watched it this year again and was just so taken with it. I forgot how good it is. And it's moved up my estimation. It's like right below Elf and Scrooge.
Oh, wow.
It's so good. And then there was a bunch of new stuff. So last year on Disney Plus, there was a movie called Noelle.
Yep.
That is Anna Kendrick playing. Basically, there's the concept here I like. It's basically that Santa is a legacy position.
Yep.
That the Kringle family selects a Santa when the old Santa dies. The oldest son becomes a new Kringle,
yep,
and becomes Santa. And this time, there is Bill Hader playing a reluctant Santa.
Yeah, he doesn't really feel...
He doesn't feel Santa-ish.
No, he's never felt Santa-ish.
But his sister, Noelle, played by Anna Kendrick, has always been like the big... She does cards, and she's a big Christmas person. And so she sort of... And her elf, like, nanny is played by Shirley MacLaine.
Yep.
And basically, she sort of suggests to him, she's like, hey, why don't you take a break? Why don't you go to someplace like these magazines? And so he disappears.
Yeah. She says, take the weekend.
And he just disappears.
I mean...
Leaving her cousin, Billy Eichner, playing the sort of techie elf, techie Kringle, to take over as Santa and start suggesting that They use an algorithm, and then only like 1,000 children get presents. Everybody else gets a letter saying you are too naughty. Reapply next year.
Yeah, and they need to use Amazon.
And they want to use Amazon Prime to deliver. And there's some funny stuff. But Noelle finds tracks her brother down in Arizona, and basically is looking for him. And so she hires this like detective with a heart of gold who's got a son. He's divorced, and he's got a son with his ex. And she basically teaches him the Christmas spirit as he helps find her brother.
Yeah.
And it's got bits of Elf in it. Like, she's naive in a Anna Kendrick way about the world.
Well, yeah, she doesn't have any idea of, like, what normal life is like.
Or money.
Or money, or what sunblock is.
Yeah, but there's some definitely funny Elfie type stuff in here. There's some heartwarming stuff.
Yeah.
It's very cute, very sweet, and Anna Kendrick just kills it.
She does. I actually also really like Bill Hader. I always do. And his sort of, like, I don't want to be Santa is really fun.
Especially after Barry. I'm like, you view Bill Hader very differently now.
Yes, he is.
I expected Santa to have a silenced pistol somewhere. but yeah, this was really fun. And then there's the stuff from this year. There's actually quite a few things this year. Happiest Season is on Hulu. I don't know if this is really a Christmas movie. It takes place at Christmas.
I mean,
It's sort of a lesbian rom-com.
It is, which is good to have.
My queer friends are split on this. I would say like 70-30. Like, a lot of my queer friends hate this movie.
Yeah, that's true.
And you got to address that when you talk about it, because it is a fair thing. It is about a sort of closeted girl putting her girlfriend through a hellish family experience. And for anyone who experienced that in real life, it could be a thing where just you can't enjoy watching it, and you just can't like the main character. Mackenzie Davis plays the main character.
Yes.
Kristen Stewart plays her girlfriend, who finds out as they're on their way to Christmas with her family that she, not only is she not told them about her, she never came out to her family, and they have to pretend to be just like roommates.
Friends. Yeah, roommates. In a one-bedroom apartment.
She leaves her pets to be pets at by David from Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, that is actually...
I forget his name.
That's actually... Oh, man. What is his name?
But he's really funny as her, like, gay friend who's like, her sounding board. And then when she gets to town, the family is... It's very strongly hinted sort of conservative politics.
It's Daniel Levy, which is Eugene Levy's son.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can really make the connection to that. Yeah. I hit that the other day. I was like, oh, my God, that's his son.
Oh, that makes so much sense. And then... The whole thing is like there's some wacky misadventures because she's trying to hide that she's, you know, her girlfriend.
Yeah.
And she runs into Aubrey Plaza, who is her first ex-girlfriend, who also got sort of slammed by this closeted girl.
Yep.
Her family is played by Victor Garber and
Mary Steenburgen.
Mary Steenburgen, who are always winning, even when they're playing kind of conservative people.
Yeah.
They're nice people, but they're like. They definitely, you don't know how they're going to react.
Right.
And her sisters are...
Their family seems all behind Victor Garber and sort of his
political
aspirations.
Yeah.
And that is what the family's about. That's the dynamic. There's nothing else. Nothing can be less than perfect.
Alison Brie plays a kind of like buttoned up ex-lawyer woman.
Yeah, turned like boxes.
She got forced into becoming a mother by her relationship and had to abandon her locker, which she clearly liked, and is now like she's like a gifting business.
Yeah, but that was like picked up by Goop, which is
she's like a giant thing.
And her mother won't acknowledge that that's actually a real job.
And their other sister is like writing a fantasy novel, and she's like this clingy girl, and she's the black sheep of the family. Like, nobody gives her any attention,
but everyone needs her for tech problems.
Yep.
And
it's the characters are all really good. The scenes I thought were really funny.
I love Kristen Stewart. I honestly think she's come a long way from Twilight, showing sort of some really good acting prowess as in various roles.
Yeah.
But she's really fun here. I do like this movie a lot.
I thought it was really cute and really sweet. I understand for some people the relationship is too toxic and they don't want the happy ending.
Right.
I get that. But I enjoyed this. This will probably go in my rotation.
It's directed by Clea DuVall, and I really like her. I always think of her from the movie The Faculty.
Oh, yeah.
She's definitely done various things from, you know, big-budget blockbusters to indie movies, and now she's started directing various things as well. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and she co-wrote this with, I think, her partner as well. Okay. So
yeah, I really like this. It's not going to be for everybody, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Christmas Chronicles 2 this year.
Yep.
So this is Kurt Russell's Christmas movie series on Netflix.
Yes.
This time they bring in his real-life wife, Goldie Hawn, played Mrs. Claus.
Yep.
And the kids from the first have grown up a little bit.
Yes.
So it starts off, they're on vacation in Mexico. Yep. With her boyfriend, Roman Reigns from Fast and Furious, yes. Which puts the Christmas Chronicles in the Fast and Furious continuity.
Yeah, of course.
It's actually not. It's Tyrese.
Well, I mean, Kurt Russell is already.
Russell, Mr. Nobody, and Santa, makes perfect sense.
Yeah, completely.
But this is, so like the girl who is the true believer, she's a teenager now, and she's kind of gripey because they're spending Christmas in Mexico.
Well, and also that her father's getting replaced.
Yeah, her father's getting replaced. She has a new stepbrother who's a younger kid. And then basically events happen to put her back in the North Pole with this new younger brother.
Yep. Obviously
Christmas is threatened, Nick.
Christmas is threatened by an old evil elf turned human.
Yep.
Because that's what happens when you, like,
there's several sins you commit. You're, like, yeah. Selfish and greedy.
And if you, like, if you do all of them, you become human. Yeah. Which is, like, sacrilege for an elf.
But we see Santa's village or Mrs. Claus's village.
Yep. Yes.
There's the Christmas Lynx, who's like a bad guy.
Yep.
There's time travel. There's some elf lore.
There's more. There's another musical number.
There's another musical number. This series, it disappoints me because what I wanted was this to be Action Santa. I wanted Kurt. What I wanted was Tango and Cash's Christmas. I wanted Kurt Russell to be sort of an action Christmas, and instead. He's just kind of a goofy Santa.
I find him to be an endearing Santa. And
I like it.
And I do... That's what I want.
It's aimed more kiddie than I like.
It is.
Like, it is definitely a kiddie movie. But... And it's... It wears its heart on its sleeve, and its sincerity is occasionally a little goofy and sappy. And I'm a guy who likes goofy, sappy.
Yeah.
But it's a little too much for me sometimes. That said, if you like the first one, you'll probably like this one.
Yeah. I liked it a little bit lesser than the first one, but I still enjoyed it. And seeing Kurt Russell just kind of have fun with the role.
Yeah.
And we get Goldie Hawn, too.
I was glad to see more Goldie Hawn.
Yeah, I love Goldie Hawn.
I feel like she was underwritten, though. They didn't give her enough to play with.
True, but like, she still had fun with it.
I wanted her to be as fun. Like, she didn't have as much fun as Santa did.
No.
Like, Kurt Russell gets to have a lot of fun as like, the... all-knowing, goofy Santa.
Right.
Mrs. Claus, she got to play sort of the sincere Mrs. Claus, and that was it.
Yeah.
Like, I would have liked a little bit of an edge to her character.
Yeah, I can
see
that. But
again, it's very kiddie.
Yes.
And so, it works for what it is. It's fun.
Yeah.
If you have kids, this is one to watch with them. Do not watch this one with the kids. Holiday.
Well, I think it opens up with an F-bomb. Foul mouth.
So, this is Emma Roberts, who I adore.
Yes.
And I don't know who the guy is.
He's
Jake something?
He's like a minor guy. Has been in a few things. Yes.
this is... I wouldn't call this a Christmas movie. It came out in October this year. And it covers the gamut of all... It starts at Christmas. It ends at Christmas.
It does.
There is some Christmassy stuff. But there's also a very memorable Halloween. And a very memorable 4th of July.
Yeah.
So the premise on this is that Emma Roberts is the perennially single daughter in this family where the other two daughters are married or getting married. And her mom's always trying to fix her up with people. And she wants no part of it. She had a rough breakup with her last boyfriend and she's kind of not dating. And then this guy, he basically keeps going to, like, holiday. He goes to a Christmas with his girlfriend who, like, wants him to propose. And she's, like, trying to drag him into this family. And he wants no part of it. And the two of them meet and decide to become each other's holidays. So basically, they are a guaranteed date, platonic, on the holidays.
They have a fun meet cute.
Yeah,
honestly,
they have a fun meet cute.
returning Christmas gifts.
And they get the idea from her aunt, played by Kristen Chenoweth.
Yes.
As like an older woman who keeps bringing different dates to the holidays. And I adore Kristen Chenoweth, and I love when she plays kind of the boozy. She was great in Glee in this kind of role.
What was the pie maker?
She plays a sweeter version of it in the Pushing Daisies.
Pushing Daisies, yeah.
But she also plays the murderer in the second season of Trial and Error, and she's amazing in that.
That sounds amazing.
She's great. I love her, and she's good here. A lot of this is on Emma Roberts, who's the lead, and she's...
So the other lead is Luke Bracey, who is definitely kind of mid to lower tier, but he played Johnny Utah in the Point Break remake.
Oof, that's rough. That's rough. Sorry.
I also played Cobra Commander in like the G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Ooh, also rough. Also rough. But he's good here.
Yes.
It's your standard rom-com as they go from platonic to falling in love. Can't decide whether they're in love. They bicker. There's other people. And then there's a big...
Sometimes the formula works, though.
It does.
And
it works.
Especially when you get Emma Roberts just playing
She's
Emma Roberts.
Great. I love her.
Yes.
Yeah, this was fun. Everybody, you and our friend Evan were talking about it. You were all like, don't expect too much, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I had a great time with it. So.
I will probably return to it.
I will too. I just don't know if I consider it a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
This one I have not watched yet. This is also new on Disney Plus. This is Godmother.
Yeah, this was a... It was a little... It's not as good as, like, Elf or Noelle, but I definitely enjoyed it, because it's about fairy godmother. A young girl wishes for something, and then fairy godmother comes to things too late when she's adult. The leads in this is Isla Fisher, and, oh man, who actually plays the fairy godmother? She was in that Brittany Runs a Marathon movie that Amazon did that was really, really good. Jillian Bell.
Yeah, Jillian Bell.
And there's cameos by June Squibb and Jane Curtin and a few other people that you will definitely recognize.
Jillian Bell has that Kathy and Jeannie energy, I think.
Yes, very much so.
I love Isla Fisher. I watched the first, like, 10 or 15 minutes of this and couldn't quite plug into it.
It's a little saccharine. It's a little kind of, like, a little too cheesy at times, but sort of her kind of coming into the human world has very elf-like qualities,
yeah.
Where she doesn't quite understand. She thinks the fastest way to move is by carriage, or that from a pumpkin turned into a carriage, of
sure.
course.
Mm-hmm.
And she hasn't learned that spell yet, so all the pumpkins she tries to turn into a carriage explode. And of course, Isla Fisher works for like a news station, and they're covering the murder of all of the pumpkins at the pumpkin patch. It's like the entire pumpkin patch has been destroyed. But yeah, it's funny. It's heartwarming. There's a lot of like Isla Fisher's kids and how sort of the fairy godmother connects with them.
Right.
It's worth watching.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. I don't know if I'll like revisit it like completely, but it's definitely worth a one-time watch.
I watched on Netflix the Jingle Jangle, the African-American heavy musical.
Yeah.
It features Keegan-Michael Key in a villain role. It's got Forest Whitaker as its lead. I didn't know he could sing, but it turns out he can sing.
I didn't know that either.
Without going too far into spoilers, because you have not seen it yet, basically it starts off, Jingle Jangle is this like toy maker, and he invents this this living toy, this little Don Juan type guy, who it turns out is like an egomaniac, and he convinces the other toy maker to steal him and run away.
Okay.
And that guy becomes Keegan-Michael Key. He becomes like the big toy maker who is known as like Willy Wonka. And Jingle Jangle basically turns his shop into a pawn shop and like gives up, and he leaves his wife and child, and grows this bitter old man version in Forrest Whitaker. And the movie starts basically, I mean, that's the opening is that. But then... his granddaughter comes to visit him, and she has the magic in her, and she starts to sort of reawaken him to the notion of making toys and that kind of stuff, and she finds out the truth about how the stuff was all stolen from him, and in the midst of all this story, there is a ton of great music.
Because this is a musical, right?
It's a musical. A friend of mine referred to it as, and there's great like musical numbers and dance numbers. Friend of mine said, it is funny because Lin-Manuel Miranda is lurking over it like the ghost of musicals present. And I'm like, that makes sense because it does, it feels a little like this is Hamilton for Christmas.
Okay.
It's not that ambitious, but it's beautiful. Like the costuming and stuff is great. The set design is great. The music and the dancing is really good.
Well, the cast I love.
Yeah.
I mean, Keegan-Michael Key, but also like I think Felicia Rashad is in this.
Yeah, yep, she is.
And I mean, I've loved Forest Whitaker since...
It's fun. I didn't fall in love with it the way some people did, but I think it was fun, and it's probably another one that may make it into the rotation.
Okay.
Lastly, this is not a movie, but a show, The Holiday Movies That Made Us, which is the same guy that does The Toys That Made Us and The Movies That Made Us. There's just a two-episode kind of mini thing that dropped.
Yeah.
One is about Elf. One is about Nightmare Before Christmas. and they are super fast jump cut edited things about making of these movies where you're like, oh my god, how did this ever happen?
Yeah, the sort of behind the scenes on how Elf got made, I was
it's crazy, right? This was supposed to be a Chris Farley movie? Because it's a holiday classic, but looking at it, it's like, wow, this is a miracle that this happened.
Yeah, the idea that Chris Farley was the person that they wanted to tap to be the Will Ferrell role. Yeah.
And Will Ferrell was kind of a nobody. He was just a Saturday Night Live guy when they did that.
Right.
And Jon Favreau was kind of a nobody. And the producer, the producer had done nothing. And the screenwriter was this guy who's obsessed. Like, this was a bunch of nobodies who somehow managed to make this movie. And then got James Caan and Bob Newhart and then who's the female lead? I'm playing Zooey Deschanel.
Zooey Deschanel
was also not a big name at the time.
No.
Like, basically, we know all these people now, and we know this is a Christmas classic, and they were setting out to make a Christmas classic, but they really, it was entirely possible they didn't make it.
It was a roll of the dice. Yeah, yeah, they're like, oh, well, we'll see.
The Nightmare Before Christmas one is also interesting. It's a lot of stuff. It's a similar story. Basically, Tim Burton had this idea back when he was an animator at Disney about doing this. He'd done designs, and then right as he got it greenlit at Disney, Batman hit big, and he went to do Batman Returns. And so Henry Selick, there's a great story in there with a producer who's like, she's this amazing like veteran producer, and she like knew how to massage the numbers. Like, they had like 18 million, and after they did start doing the stuff, it was like, it was going to be 24 million. I love this story. So she basically, she said, okay, she went to the creators and the writers and was like, okay, find me $6 million in cuts to make in this movie. And so they did. And then she showed like a mock-up of the 24 million, the completed movie, to the studio executives, knowing that they would fall in love with it, and they did. And she's like, okay, that movie you just saw cost 24 million. Here are the things we can cut out to make it 18. And they basically gave her the $6 million because they were like, there's like the scene you just loved, we'd have to cut that. And it's like, it's brilliant.
Yeah, and now it's on Disney Plus.
They put Tim Burton's name on it, even though he was the director. This is fascinating stuff, and there's some funny stories. I talked to Danny Elfman quite a bit.
Oh, okay,
it's really good. I love these stories, and
it's kind of interesting how all of our favorite movies have these stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, Die Hard wasn't really a Die Hard movie at the time.
Well, it's interesting because. My friend Les, I do a TV podcast, and my friend Les interviewed the producer of all this stuff, and he was talking about basically like that. He's like, "Yeah, there are episodes we can't do because we go and look around, and it's basically where the movie got greenlit, it got written, it got done, and it got released, and it was a big success. Like, that's not a story. I can't tell that story. So it's like he only gets the stories, and he's like, it's got to be a movie that people know. It's got to be something that, you know, you can't do something so obscure that nobody would know what it is." You know, and that kind of thing. So it's interesting to find all the ones that have these stories. But yeah, totally worth it watching. That's Nick and Randy's Christmas Corner.
On other things not Christmas Corner, I just want to mention two things that I think people should watch. There, if you have Apple TV Plus, watch Wolfwalkers.
Yep.
Okay. It is an amazing animation. It feels very hand-drawn, but it's about individuals who turn into wolves. It's in like this English town or Irish town that is sort of taken over by the English. Okay. And it's really, really good. Sean Bean plays the father of the main character. It's just got a beautiful story.
Yeah.
And I think it's more people should take note of it because it's really, really good. And I know Randy didn't get into this, but on HBO Max, The Flight Attendant just finished.
A lot of people are loving this.
And I thought the finale was perfect.
Okay.
And I thought Kaylee Cuoco?
Cuoco, yeah.
Was great as a lead. She did voice Harley Quinn, but her character arc was great.
Okay.
I love the secondary cast. There's a member from Sabrina that when she showed up, I was just like overjoyed to see her.
This may have to give another shot.
It's like an 8-episode series.
Okay, well, I've watched half of it then, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely worth finishing out. They can do a second season, but if they don't, it's not the end of the world. Okay. And I was really pleased with how it ended.
All right, well, I might get back to it at some point. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we will be here with the Ghost of Christmas Future, a.k.a. Anna. I am visited now by the ghost of Christmas Future, Anna.
Hi.
You're the ghost. You have to be scary and deathly. Like,
yeah,
you're here to teach me an important lesson about what's going to happen if I don't turn over a new leaf.
Oh, yeah, you better stop liking boot cuffs, Brandy, or else we're gonna kick the crap out of you. And by we, I mean me,
yep.
The ghost of Christmas Future, yep. Comma, Anna.
With your legendary baseball bat from Cyberpunk 2077.
With my legendary baseball bat that does 1,071 damage.
That is what we're here to talk about.
Yeah.
Anna and I have both been playing Cyberpunk 2077 on what you would call, mildly an obsessive level?
Yeah, definitely. I think I checked. So Steam, unfortunately, has a feature where when you go to, like, open up the game,
uh-huh.
It shows you how many hours you've played.
Oh, that's never a good idea.
Oh, it's bad because I think the day that Dave gave me Ghosts of Tsushima to play, I got home and I realized that Cyberpunk had finished downloading because I had set it to download before I left.
Yeah.
And, like, yesterday, and to clarify, this is before I put 8 more hours into it. Like, less than a week into having this game, I realized that, I've put 23 hours into this. I have played for almost a full fucking day.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny because I was playing, I got it on day one, because I've been looking forward to this game for so long. I love the Cyberpunk RPG.
Yeah.
I first played it when I was 17 years old. And I have played various iterations throughout the years. Like, when they announced this, I was super happy. And when I saw that Johnny Silverhand was being played by Keanu Reeves,
yeah.
I was like, man, this game, and Mike Pondsmith, the creator, is involved in it. Like,
yeah.
This is going to be great. And there was delay upon delay.
Delay.
And people were talking about being buggy. And I'm like, oh, man, I hope this isn't a disappointment. For some people, it was.
Yeah.
A lot of people were real upset about it. I loved this game. I got it. I've been playing it. And then you messaged me right after you got it.
Yeah.
And you're like, Randy, tell me something. How did you come to work when you instead wanted to play Cyberpunk all the time?
Yeah. Yeah. Aw, jeez. Because I was, like, sitting here. I was in the store when I sent that. And there was, like, nobody here. And I was like, I could be...
Home playing
I could
Cyberpunk
be playing
right
Cyberpunk
now.
Right now. And I desperately want to be.
So, this is a... It's Grand Theft Auto Night City in some ways.
Yeah.
Like, it is like a big open world.
It is.
But it's much more directed than that. Like, it has a big story to it.
And I think that definitely the strength of it is the story. There are, like, very, very few cyberpunk properties.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say cyberpunk, I mean the genre, not the tabletop title.
Yeah. Yep.
That, like, really, really actually capture the feeling of, I think, being in a cyberpunk story.
Yeah.
Like, that first gig, I don't want to spoil anything, but, like, that first job that you do, like, it is the most cyberpunk thing, and I don't think I have ever been so tense or, like, stressed and upset in my life.
Yeah, we should say, by the way, there may be a few spoilers in here. We're going to try not to spoil everything, but we're going to spoil a few things, because I want to talk about that first job, the prologue
job. Oh, my God, it's so good.
So, like, there's a bit in there where you're, like, basically you're trying to steal something from his corporate honcho.
Yeah.
And you've been, it's you, we're working for a new fixer. Well, I like that new fixer. I
liked him, too.
Until he shot me in the head.
Until he shot me in the
then
fucking
I,
head.
Then I liked him less.
Yeah.
But it's you and your buddy Jackie, who I fell,
it's like a childhood friend.
Fell in love with.
He's a sweet boy who did nothing wrong.
Great. Yes, well, a few things wrong.
But it's Night City, baby.
And then you've got T-Bug, your hacker, who I also love. They make you fall in love with these characters so fast.
Yeah, it's like shocking because you've only known them for like maybe like 30 or so minutes of in-game time.
But the writing is so good.
They
and
are.
The dialogue is so good. Like, the characters are just come alive.
Yeah.
And so when they murder them in front of you all the time,
it
always
sucks.
Gets a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, you're doing this heist for a corporate, and you're going into a big, secured, like, we should not be doing this as our first level mission kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, what are we doing?
So out of their depth.
And, and things go wrong.
Very wrong.
And you wind up inside a TV in the room.
Yeah, like a two-way mirror almost, where you're like... trapped in this enclosed space, and
you
can't
go anywhere.
You can't go anywhere.
Because if you leave it, you're gonna get shot.
You're just gonna immediately get ruined. And your buddy is like clutching the thing you've stolen, and you're like sitting here like, oh God, I hope that this guy and his extremely badass bodyguard, who is Adam Smasher, which is hilarious,
cybered up monster.
Sitting here and basically. like praying that they don't realize that you've stolen something.
And then it gets worse.
It gets so much worse.
Because then you are witness to a crime that you don't want to be witness to.
You definitely don't.
You're like, oh, well, now that I've seen this, I'm going to be dead.
I'm definitely dead. If they don't just outright kill me right here, they're going to blame this on me. Because that guy doesn't want to get in trouble for it.
And that is the spine of the whole central story, and it works so well.
So good.
Yeah.
And it actually, believe it or not, gets worse from there.
Oh, yeah.
You are just so totally and completely fucked from, like, the outset of this mission, and you're sitting here thinking, like, fuck, it cannot get more fucked than this, and then something more fucked happens, and it's just that slippery slide from, like, we're gung-ho about this mission to Jesus Christ, it's 2020 and everything's on fire, is just, like, just immediate and just incredible.
And also, I like the character they've built up for you. Like, you get to choose one of three options. You're either a nomad, a street kid, or a corpo.
Which one did you pick, by the way?
I picked street kid.
I picked the corpo because...
Did you? That's the only one I didn't know about.
Yeah, so I picked that one because I was like, what's more cyberpunk than playing, like, a corporate raider who, like, is out of the game?
Well, you're such a corporate person in real life.
I know.
It makes such, so much sense.
Yeah, I know. Well, I read it because, like, the description was, like, few people can manage to keep their souls alive working in a corporate job, but you're, like, one of the few who still has, like, some, I don't know, some...
Yeah.
Character or whatever.
Right.
And I was like, that sounds like it would be fun, especially because I imagine it's not going to last very long.
Nope.
it doesn't. I don't know how it works in the background that you did, but where I fell in love with Jackie is, like, you get fired because you get caught being asked to do wet work for your boss.
Oh, that's funny.
And these, like, guys from Arasaka HQ, they come down, that's, like, the corporate
thing
you work for, and they're evil and terrible. They come down to this bar where you're meeting with Jackie to talk about the job, and they repo your cybernetics.
Oh, wow.
Like, on the spot. They, like, turn them all off, and they're like, you have an hour to get to a...
Cyberdoc.
Yeah, to get to a cyberdoc to get them out of you, or else you'll die.
Because in the street kid, it's just you go to this doc who you've known all your life, and he gives you free eyewear.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do that, too.
Yeah.
But the Arasaka guys, they were going to let you go, and then they realized that you were probably worth more to them, like, alive than dead if they, you know, brought you to their boss.
Right.
And Jackie, like, goes to bat for you. He's like, I bet you everyone in this fucking room has a gun. And no one in this room likes Arasaka.
Oh, that's awesome.
So if you guys want to start a gunfight with everybody in this seedy dive bar, you go ahead and pull your weapons and try and take my friend from me.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
No, I didn't
it's real
get that.
Great. And you're, like, swimming in and out of consciousness and, like, about to fall over, and Jackie, like, comes in to save the day.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that
awesome.
Was why I fell in love with him.
Yeah. I want to play the other prologues now, because my son played the Nomad one.
Uh-huh.
And he talked about it a little bit. I didn't see him play it, so I don't know that one either. But the other thing is, huge map.
Oh, like, it's massive.
Because the main story is one thing, but there's also all these side stories and all these side characters you follow through on stories.
Mm-hmm.
And there's different romance options.
Yeah.
And there's you run in with this nomad. As you go after the nomads, there's outside the city, there's this big brush area. There's the nomad area.
Yeah.
There's a power plant that you get involved in. Like, there's all this extra stuff.
It's a shockingly large map.
It's huge.
Like, when I say I'm surprised they didn't delay it for longer, I don't just mean because it's buggy, but because the map is, like, legitimately massive.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you get cars and, like, motorbikes and stuff to, like, move around the city, and there are fast travel points, and even with that, it still can take you a bit of time to get from job to job.
Oh, yeah, when I'm like, oh, I gotta go to this job, I'll pull up my journal and be like, and I'll look on the map, I'm like, that's all the way across town. Let's do a different job closer.
Yeah, let's do something else until we get there.
Because it'll be like your little indicator pops up, and it's like, you know, 50 meters or 200 meters away, and I'm like, okay, I can make it there. I can run there.
Yeah.
And then you get some, and your job's like, oh, 500 or 600. Well, I'll call my car or my bike, which, by the way, I love that feature.
Yeah.
You call
it's
and
great.
It autopilots
it
to you.
It drives up.
And then so you don't have to go find where you parked your car or anything.
I did have a really, I say, charming bug early on where I did call my car and it fell out of the sky and killed me instantly.
That's amazing. That's so good. So, I had a bug where I called my car and it said it's 3 kilometers away and it's not getting any closer.
I had that too,
okay,
and I was like,
all right.
Yeah, well, at least it didn't fall out of the sky and kill me. So,
but sometimes you'll get a map thing and it's like, it's 2 kilometers away. And I'm like, oh, I'm not doing that job right now.
Yeah.
It's way away from me.
Yeah. Which is a strength,
but
I might add.
You can drive it. I like that. Yeah. You get your car, you drive it, it takes a little while.
But
That was the other thing, is early on, like, you, like, get in the car, and I think Jackie drives.
Yeah.
Sort of, like, give you an intro to Night City.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, by the way, you can skip car rides if you want. And I find myself not really ever skipping
them. Because you want to watch the city around you while you're not, like, stressed.
Not having to worry about being shot at, I say, even though 90% of the time that you get in a car, you start having to worry about getting shot at.
Yep.
But, no, it's, like, really fascinating to, I don't know. I think they sort of, like, were billing it as a... Not billing it, but, like, they wanted to create a cyberpunk simulator, effectively. And that's why so much of the game is in first person.
Yeah.
And by so much of, I mean literally the entirety of
it. All of it, except you can change the viewpoint of the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, thank fucking
Which
God.
Which I do, because, man, trying to drive in first person is super hard.
Yeah, no. It's stressful to drive in first person in real life. I don't want to do that in a video game.
Yeah, especially with the control of the cars in this is not the best.
So I have a point that I maintain. It's that if you're playing a video game... And it's not explicitly a driving game.
Yeah.
The driving is fucking bad.
Yeah, you shouldn't do driving.
Yeah,
that's
you
true.
Just yeah. So the driving in this actually once I realized you could move it into third person, got significantly better.
Yeah, for
but,
sure.
Oh boy, howdy!
You still want to drive a bike around most of the time.
Yeah, the bike is the best. The but I did. I did, holy crap. So, one of the things that I love about this game is there are definitely, like, a bunch of different type of weird missions.
Uh-huh.
And if you know me, it will probably not surprise you at all to discover that I play a character who just punches everything. That's it. I have a baseball bat for when my fists don't do the job, but I just prefer punching. And there's a series of missions that you can get from your, like, fight promoter.
Yeah, who, in your building.
Yeah, in your building, who sends you around town to go beat the crap out of, like, some of the toughest guys from other neighborhoods, and it really feels like a bit like Letterkenny Season 1.
Yes, yes.
Which is great. But I go to this one area of town, and this guy, he's like a peacock-type guy, like, wearing, like, real shiny clothes, and he has this... ugly as fuck lowrider with like a bunch of like shit painted on the side. It's like bright sparkly gold, and he's like I need to make some quick cash, so if you double your ante, I'll throw in my car. And I of course beat the crap out of him and took his hideous car, and I drive it everywhere. It is the ugliest thing on the planet I can imagine. It's got like a mural on the side that's like only God can judge me. It's
nice.
So over the top.
There's all kinds of side missions. There's all kinds of gear too. You upgrade your clothes, which you then you have to make the choice between the way it looks and how much armor it provides you.
Yeah, I'll
that
die.
Is tricky.
I'll die in one hit before I equip that stupid fedora.
Look, I wore booty shorts for a while because they have the best armor. I was driving around in an Arasaka armor vest and booty shorts.
Booty shorts.
With my blue mohawk and my blue beard and. Booty shorts. It was amazing. And combat boots, by the way.
Yeah, I love it. No, that's a look.
Yeah, that was a look. I kept the booty shorts. You can sell or disassemble. So, with your gear, you can disassemble it for parts. You can then use to craft other stuff or upgrade your weapons. Love the ability to upgrade your weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So, you don't have to get rid of your stuff you love.
You
just keep upgrading. Or, you can sell it and get money to use for various things for cyberware or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, you also have a place in your house where you can store stuff.
Yeah.
And I stored those booty shorts in case I ever want to put them on and show them off.
Yeah.
That's it. But I got a trench coat, which I'm super happy about.
Was it the one from that one lady who...
I think it might have been.
It looks like very Trinity from The Matrix.
Yeah. But once I got a trench coat, man, I'm like, oh yeah, I love the trench coat.
Yeah, I'm never going to take this off.
It's a great cyberpunk look.
Yeah.
Then occasionally you'll get like gang stuff.
Yeah.
Or like if you beat down some of the corporations like the Militech or the Arasaka guys, you get their helmets or their gear.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. There's net running suits you can put on. Like, there's so much different stuff. And the guns are great.
The guns are great. So, normally, a big complaint that I have about, like, role-playing game, like, RPG shooters is that, like, you can sort of feel like your opponents are just bullet sponges.
Yeah.
And it's like, I really feel silly when I unload 6 rounds of a shotgun into someone and they just stand back up and they're like, what are you doing? And it's like, well, what are you doing? But, like, this one feels really responsive. The guns feel, like, super cool.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I mean, not that I would know. I don't use guns. I just punch people with my big fucking arms. But, yeah, it feels very good and responsive.
I still, when I find a gun that I like, I'm always excited. Because there's also levels. There's, like, common, uncommon,
rare,
legendary, and epic.
Yeah. Or, like, unique, where it's, like, for stuff like...
Yeah.
Johnny Silverhand used this gun.
Yeah.
It's like, well, yeah, it's a unique legendary gun.
So I love when I find a cool gun like that. I've also, like, there's 3 different types of guns. There's, like, Power, which like the bolts can ricochet off other surfaces. Tech, which lets you charge up guns.
Oh, yeah.
I got a shotgun that was tech, and it was great.
Is it the one where you charge it down, and then it just fires, like, a 4-round burst?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That thing is nuts.
And then later on, if you get the right cyberware, you get a smart gun, which basically just means you have to aim in the general direction, and the bullets go to your target.
Yeah, which is sweet.
Great for me, because I'm not great at aiming.
Yeah, that's fair.
There's also, like, 8 types of grenades.
Yeah.
Like, 10 different kinds of there's bladed weapons and bludgeons for hand weapons.
Yeah.
There's all these different stuff. There's all the cyberware you can add in, which like you can get slow motion going.
Yeah.
There's all the net running stuff where you're like you live can hack people and hack their stuff. You can like set someone on fire with your net running.
Yeah, like, you like set their implants like to overheat and shit. It's,
there's so much cool stuff in this.
Yeah. To clarify, game very buggy.
Oh sure, I mean, I'm on the PS4. People are not wrong. I've finished a combat and the whole thing crashed. I'm like, oh, I guess I gotta play that again.
But unironically, I love it.
Yeah.
I would say in spite of, but I think in some instances because of the bugs.
Yeah.
But then again, I mean, like I started playing games like in an era where literally everything was buggy all the time.
I think that's the thing too. I'm used to games being buggy.
Yeah.
I don't expect a game to be polished out the door.
I don't either. And like for example, my favorite game of all time, Fallout New Vegas, I seem to recall distinctly several times killing people and before I could loot them, they just would fly into the sky and never come back down. And it's like, well, that guy had special loot on him that I fucking wanted, or a quest item.
That happens in real life too.
Yeah, it does.
You kill someone, and their corpse just flies up into
the sky.
Yeah.
He's getting raptured.
Yeah, that's where the rapture came from. It's just a misunderstanding, people taking loot from you.
Yeah,
God took your loot.
Fuck you, God.
I'm sorry, Jod.
Jod. Fuck you, Jod. Give me my loot back. Oh gosh, it's just so much fun.
We've talked about this all day today. I'm excited to keep playing it. I've finished the main game.
Yeah.
And then it gets you to a reset point where you can go back and do
all the other stuff.
Because before you go into the final story, it says, hey, you're at a point. Like, if you do this, you're locked in. You want to finish the other side stories, do it now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want to finish the story. So then after the credits, you get to go back and go basically at that point and play whatever you want until you go through the story again.
It's a shame that there isn't, like, an after-the-fact, and I hope that they do this, assuming they ever get the opportunity to make more DLCs. Yeah.
There were plans for DLC and multiplayer, and I'll be so mad if that doesn't happen.
I'm so glad that I get to be the one to do this now, because usually, like, if there's a comic book that I like, and it gets canceled, Randy's like, it sucks, but we see it all the time.
Yep.
We like stuff and it just gets canceled.
Yep.
This happened to me with Mass Effect Andromeda, and I am traumatized.
Yeah, yeah, I get that.
Like last week, I talked about how much I liked
Mass
Effect.
There's nothing wrong with Andromeda. Andromeda's
a
perfectly good game.
It is. I would like EA to give me my $100 that I spent on your fucking epic gold edition of the game back. Fuck you.
Well, how about if they give you a refund for Cyberpunk, but then they take it off your console? Because that was what people were griping about. Sony pulled it from the PlayStation Store, which is dumb.
Yeah.
But people like asked for their refund and then got mad they didn't have the game anymore. Like that's not how it works. You don't get to keep the game and get the refund.
They are more than welcome to give me $60 and then take Cyberpunk off my console because I am playing it on the PC.
Yes,
where it's actually pretty functional.
I've heard the PC is probably the best version.
It is,
but I'm having a great time on the PS4, bugs and all. So. Anyway, Cyberpunk, y'all should go play it.
It'll be great when it's finished, but it's great right now, too.
It'll be great. It'll even better at the end of 2021.
Yeah.
All right. That'll do it for us this week. And I have recorded you, Joe, so...
Wait, what lesson did you learn, Randy?
Oh, what lesson did I learn?
There's a lesson here.
I learned that even if a game is buggy, it can still be great.
Well, I was thinking more along the lines that you should have learned that booty shorts and combat boots are an excellent, like, accessory for your wardrobe.
Oh, I knew that.
Oh.
Yeah.
What am I doing here?
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.